The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gillen.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome again to the program Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network. I have back in the studio with me now, actually the first time here in the studio, the last time we were on the phone together, but with me today is Keisha King. Keisha is from Jacksonville. She is a representative of Moms for Liberty. You may well have seen her recently on Fox News because she has been in the news a lot. And there's a lot of news to really try to take in this day and age, but it's really great to have Keisha here. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be back.
Well, we're happy to have you back. And you're here in Orlando for an event that is actually going to, by the time we have this program aired, will have already been in the past. But you're here to be with my good friend John Stenberger and the Florida Family Policy Council's event called Empowering Parents to Protect Children.
Yes.
And there are two major emphases that were talked about at this conference. And one of them was the critical race theory that we're all hearing about. And I know that there still are a lot of parents that have a lot of catching up to do about what's going on. And I believe it would be fair to say that a lot of them really doubt that this is happening. I've had comments from parents who, almost when I mention it, they're saying, well, that's not a big deal at my school. And I'm wondering if they are aware of just how big it is.
I find that too. More and more parents are realizing that this is alive and well in many, many schools in some way or another. Some of them are less blatant than others. But I would encourage any parent, every parent, to, or any every concerned citizen, to dig into the curriculum at their schools, because I would almost guarantee it's there in some way, shape, or form. And I don't mean to sound hyperbolic. I don't mean to sound, you know, like there's a boogeyman. I've heard people say that, but it is just that pervasive.
It is pervasive, and it's part of the platform, if you will, of the Biden administration. It's part of what the progressives are pushing, and to the what would look like the attempts to even maybe reshape American history to make everyone believe in America that we are systemically racist and the 1619 Project is really the truth about the way our country was founded and the principles upon our country. So all of these things weigh in. And when you have the very top levels of government and the Department of Education pushing something through, it's really, I agree with you, it's really hard to believe that there would be schools on a wide range that aren't teaching it at all.
Yes. I mean, I think when we see in higher education, we see segregated graduations. In Duval County, we had a scheduled segregated assembly for high schoolers. So when you have consultants or whatever that come in from that are employed by the public school system that are putting these types of ideas into the children's minds, it's not really that far-fetched that they would be teaching something in the classroom as well.
So how are those friends that you would have who have children like you do? You're a mom, and you are, again, are part of this group called Moms for Liberty. What is it like to be at your age, to have children your age, and to have to deal with this on a firsthand, up close? It's one thing to hear it on the news, but when you have a child that is actually being taught this or becomes exposed to this kind of talk, tell us what that's like.
It's strange because it's like we're traveling back in time, because even when I was growing up, some of the rhetoric that I hear the young kids say, we just did not look at each other like that. Like we just didn't experience those things where every single thing was around race. We mm-hmm. did not look at each other like that. You know, we just wanted to hang out with our friends. And at the end of the day, most of these kids, that's what they are doing. They just want to be kids. They just want to hang out with their friends. But it's the adults that are pushing these narratives on them and causing them to look at each other mm-hmm. and judge them through these exterior characteristics like skin color or whatever particular group you say you're a part of, and even political sides. I mean, you see this in classrooms. In St. John's County, which is like, I don't know, probably 30 minutes from Duval County, there was a teacher who was saying that because this kid had a Trump flag, he was racist. Like, this was in the classroom. And the kids were like, no, his best friend is black. He's not racist. But it just turned into this whole thing. And the adults aren't being adults. They're acting like children and get kids all riled up and get them so focused on race. It's like everything is racist. Everything is around race. Every, you know, or you're put into your little group. And it's totally divisive.
It is divisive. And you know what's so amazing to me, Keisha? I remember back, I didn't vote for him because of policies, not because of the color of his skin. But when President Obama made the election night on his first election in 08, he made the statement that night, and I prayed, I wanted him to succeed. I think mm-hmm. most Americans, I won't say all, I'm sure that's not true, but most Americans would have wanted this to succeed. But he made the statement that we were going to be more united than divided. Now, that may not have been the exact phrase, but that was what the gist of it was. And then when President Biden, he had his inaugural speech, he was there to unite us and to be the president of all people. Now, we're seeing things from both of these presidents that is actually what would look to me like to be in the facing the opposite direction. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, he also Barack Obama also said that he wanted to fundamentally change America.
Well,
I think
that
he was
did.
Serious when he when he said that.
Yes.
And I think we thought he meant like, oh, I'm just going to be like, you know, the first black president. Oh, that's a fundamental change. No, he meant literally uproot our core values.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we thought that we would vote in someone who really didn't love the country. But you start to have to wonder what his motives were when he started to do the things that he did and say the things that he said. And mm-hmm. then you have Joe Biden, who's continuing those yeah. same types of things.
Well, just a couple of days ago, Joe Biden has now done the same thing that we heard Obama do, and that was the apology tour, apologizing for the Paris Climate Accord and the fact that President Trump pulled us out. And I would believe that we were pulled out for very good reasons and not buying into what, as you said, the narrative. But that narrative is it's a wide berth narrative that's going across our culture. And it's like sweeping right now. And it's very difficult to keep up with the angst of people right now, because you take on almost every front, economic, when you take this issue with the pandemic, when you look at the issue of transgenderism and societal, what would be even a change, a massive change in the mores of our culture. When you look at America and like you said, the root values that we've stood on, it's like one slap in the face right after another where we're seeing change. It's hard to keep up with.
It is. And I think that's why you have the people who are like, we have to do something about it. We, you know, we can't comply. We won't take not one more right. We won't stand for one more right to be taken away from us. And then you have the people that feel like, well, it's just going to pass. You know, it's really not that bad. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're waiting for, and I don't mean to be so dramatic, but it's like they're waiting for the gas chamber. You know, it's like, well, you know, we'll just relax until it gets really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I because it's coming so fast, you feel like you're fighting on so many different levels. There are people, in my opinion, there are people at work who are intentionally trying to destroy this country. If America goes down, the rest of the world is in, you know, pretty much poverty. The majority of the world lives in poverty. America is exceptional because, you know, we don't have those permanent classes here. We don't have, you know, you can be born rich and die poor, or be born poor and die rich in America. And that idea, that experiment, the uniqueness of our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence or Bill of Rights makes America uniquely different. I don't think people realize it's really, really different from other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And it has to come down for, I think, you know, I'm putting on my tin hat here, for the globalists and this big elite to have total control. America, mm-hmm. America, the way it functions, can't be America for a dictatorship. It doesn't, right. You know, our government doesn't work that way. And so America has to come down for the globalists, I think, or elite or whatever, to have power. And I think there's an effort to do that.
What's so difficult about it all is it's not just the politicians. It's not just the government. You have added to that this massive force of the media that is like a surrounding atmosphere, if you will, that is around and hovering around this big orb of government that is pushing all of these changes. And the media at times maybe even retranslates or covers or tries to soften. And I mean, we saw that with this situation of President Biden falling asleep at the recent meetings. And can you imagine how the same news media would have covered that had anything of that level happened to President Trump? Can you imagine what that would have been like?
I don't think we have to imagine. We lived it. We
right.
lived just under, you know, total monitoring of every single sneeze and cough and incorrect statement that President Trump did, or, you know, anything he said. But that is indicative of where we are in a lot of culture. I mean, that's kind of like cancel culture too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said something 10 years ago and it was okay, but now today, we don't do forgiveness anymore. You know, you can't, there's no forgiveness. There's no second chances. You said something and you have to go. You must be gone. And it's so funny because people, you know, especially as believers, we know that, you know, the Bible tells us there is none good but
no,
God.
No, not one. Yeah.
And for America to be built on these Judeo-Christian values, for us to just have lost the idea of forgiveness, it's really sad when you think about it, that something you may have said might end your career, or you know, even something that you said in jest, you were just joking, or, you know, it's just whatever they choose. It just feels so heavy. You know, it feels like they have just so much control, because they can literally take you off of Twitter. They could just ship you off into no man's land.
Right.
And then try to make you non-existent. That is very scary.
Well, at minimal, it is a loss of freedom. At the minimum, it is a far cry from what we've had in free speech, what has been understood and what was protected by our Bill of Rights and by the amendments of the Constitution. And these efforts, again, you could just go almost down the line of everything that has been happening since day one of our, another example would be energy independence. Mm-hmm. We have now put ourselves into a dire situation. And now, but the latest is this vaccine mandate that is really threatening Christmas. It's threatening delivery of food. It's threatening goods and services. It's already bottlenecked a lot of America. And that mixed with the impact of COVID, the pandemic. We're talking about a situation right now that our winter months could be very interesting.
Absolutely. You know, I often say all Biden had to do is just sit back, maybe do like an interview or two, or have, you know, Psaki go out there and say a couple things. Keep the Trump policies. They were working. They were really, really
economically
good.
They were wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. Just sit back and, you know, make a statement here or there and just like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. And just let everything kind of coast through.
Yeah.
But no, he went and stripped everything down, which put us in a total economic fall. And then on top of that, put us put us back into situations that we were happy that we got out of.
Mm-hmm.
Like being, you know,
like the Iran nuclear deal,
the
climate
Paris,
control.
Yes. And not being energy dependent anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, let's stop the pipeline.
Right.
And that's just amazing.
It's, you know, I wish he would have just sat back and said, I'm really trying to do all I can do to just
right,
just let it ride.
So then we throw in here, and we're about 4 minutes away from a break here. We're in here now with these social issues. There's no question about it. I've never heard it expressed the way they've done it. But even in talking about an infrastructure, when you think of an infrastructure bill, those of us that know anything about history and those that would know government and they think about, okay, the role of infrastructure. Now we're talking about hard, real concrete things like bridges and highways and waterways, etc. But now we're talking about social infrastructure. And along with that, again, a reordering of the way we look at even the fundamentals of our country, the way we consider race, and this thing called CRT, critical race theory. You're addressing that at this event with John Stenberger. What are you going to be saying to them?
I always try to give a little backstory of my own story, testimony. And I try to give them the basics. So when they are confronted with these curriculums at school or hear it in the media or see it, you know, just wherever, whenever, because it's everywhere. So they know what to listen for, and they know that this is more than just a theory. This is a worldview. This is.
It's a worldview different than the biblical worldview.
Oh, absolutely.
So different.
There is no room for God. In critical race theory, there is no forgiveness there either. I think that's part of why we have fallen so easily into this cancel culture, why we so easily do that to people, to human beings, is because of, it's almost like the spirit of critical race theory. It's over kind of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
The word critical, at least, is honest, because they're critical of everything.
Right. And back to the infrastructure and this sort of ties to critical race theory and all of its derivatives. Infrastructure, like you said, it typically means bridges, roads, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you have like jackhammers and actual like machines doing stuff. Definitions don't mean anything anymore. Like, you can't even call a woman a woman.
Yeah.
So, you know, like,
it's true.
Even like, so
yeah.
Infrastructure, it's like, no, we don't mean that kind of infrastructure. We're changing definitions
yeah.
now. You know, it's like, come on, catch up. You know, this postmodern, you know, society that these folks are trying to create.
Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a break right now, because what you're saying right now is so critical. The whole thing about postmodernism, we're there. I don't know where we're going, as one writer of a country song said, but we're here. We may not know where we're going, but we're here. And I've got Keisha King as my guest. We'll be back with Keisha in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. In the studio today with Keisha King. What a delight it is to have her here. We had her on our program last April, toward the end of April. And Keisha is very active in our culture, very active with moms. She is a mom and she has kids, and there's a lot at stake. When you're a parent and you've got these things that are going on in the schools, I don't care what this most recent thing that the Attorney General said, parents who are who are making a complaint, they are not a domestic terrorist.
No, we are not.
And I like the way you said we are not. I'm a parent too, and I'm not, but I have opinions. And, you know, it's gotten to, you know, you were talking in segment one about all these changes and part of this thing. And you had just mentioned this thought about postmodernism. And I want to go back to that because that really is a driver in all of this. You know, postmodern thought does not look at viewpoints as being options.
Right.
A postmodernist would look at a differing viewpoint as being a threat.
Yeah, it removes objectivity.
Yes.
You know, everything is relative. It's like, oh, well, red is not really red. Like, what does that mean?
You know, it's like the atheism issue. If you're an atheist, you have to wonder, what are you for? What can you really put out there that is hopeful, helpful, inspiring, and there's nothing?
I don't understand atheism because they like to say that they don't believe in God, obviously, but they have created their own God because, I mean, if they probably won't see it this way, but human beings are meant to worship God.
Yes.
And so regardless of whatever they think, they are still going to worship something, mm-hmm. and they worship, in my opinion, themselves. They worship their own
self. No question about it. Yeah.
but they don't realize that even the notion of what is right and wrong and what is good and evil comes from God. That doesn't come from you. Look around, look at our past as human beings. To me, it is so clear that we are not good. You know, we have a virus, for the lack of a better word, mm-hmm. a detrimental flaw. It's in the, you know, at this point it's baked into the cake, and we need a savior. You know, we need something better than ourselves. We can't even make decisions regularly on a, you know, on a good day.
Right. Well, and the other thing with that, Keisha, is that our country was founded on that very premise, that there is a creator, that we're created by him, and that we have inalienable rights that come from him, not from the government.
Right.
But they come from God. So these things are really part of our fabric. You I like the DNA analogy that you gave. They're part of America's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're seeing a time right now where, you know, they're trying to strip that meaning, that understanding, those definitions that you referred to earlier. Those are being changed. They're being changed with post haste. I mean, it is amazing how fast, and you've got to almost put a seatbelt on in your school chair to keep from falling out from the speed of the life that is changing in what's being taught to our kids.
Absolutely. I think that because we've been so comfortable in America, you know, we're tucked over here in this, you know, nice little part of the world. We don't, you know, we don't have to worry about bombs flying over us and things like that. And we've, you know, been pretty safe, reasonably. Mm-hmm,
pretty safe.
And so we're kind of like, yeah, you know, the schools are fine. I mean, the grades, you know, we could do better with like STEM, you know. There's always like this big push for STEM, and which is great, but I think we were way too comfortable because all it took was a couple months of COVID for parents to see what in the world was being taught to their children.
Yeah.
And it just lit a fire because it feels like it came out of nowhere, but this has been around.
It has been around,
yeah. And we have not been on our watch. We have not been on our game, watching these institutions that have control over our children. We send them, our children, into their care for 7 or 8 hours out of the day. And, you know, part of that's our fault, you know, as just Americans. We should have been much more vigilant in what our children were being exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting back then, so the fight wouldn't be so hard now.
I couldn't disagree with that. I mean, I agree completely with that. It is very clear, even back when my wife and I moved to Florida in 1985, we ended up having a decision about what we were going to do down here with our schools in Indiana. A friend of mine who was a pastor at a large church there had what was a wonderful Christian school, but we couldn't bring that school down with us. And we got down here and we didn't have any options, and we couldn't put our kids into public school, because even in 1985, that was very clear to us that that wasn't a safe option. And so we began homeschooling at a time when parts of the country, homeschooling was still kind of against the law. And you could get truant officers after your kids in some states back then, and it was radical. So doing what we did in 1985, now we know that over the last several years, homeschooling became very popular. COVID made it not only popular, but incredibly important. But along with that, maybe like you said, a surprise outcome, parents are getting an eyeful of what the textbooks that their kids are reading and studying and having to take tests on and listening to lectures on, right, is all inclusive of.
Yeah. And that's why when I was at the Pray Vote Stand Summit in Loudoun County, Virginia, and, you know, this was right around when Garland had came out with the memo sending the FBI after parents, because we were concerned about what was going on in our children's school, not to mention that a parent who was referenced in the National School Board Association's letter to the Biden administration, where his daughter had been, now that we know, I don't think we have to say alleged, but I will just for clarity, that their daughter was allegedly raped. And so, you know, for a father to demand answers and figure out what's going on with his own child, and to be turned around, to be called a domestic terrorist, for me, looking at all of this, realizing that we had rallied, we've protested, we've written letters, we've emailed, and now the government, the FBI, the federal government says that parents are domestic terrorists. My comment was, I think at this point, we just need a mass exodus from this school system, because that is the only thing that they understand. Because when you pull your child out of school, along comes the funding.
Mm-hmm. There it goes out the window too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it just became clear to me that they had no interest in, and we knew that, like when we would go to speak at school board meetings, we could tell their minds were already made up. They didn't want to hear anything that we said. It was like we were talking into the wind. And, you know, it's just so clear that there are, the American people and the government are not, it has become reversed. Like, we're supposed to be a republic that represents the people, but they are just dictating what we should and shouldn't do, and using the heavy hand of the federal government to come after parents. It's unbelievable. It really is.
It really is unbelievable. And going back to that scenario where you were quoted, and one of the things that happened with your life is that you got a lot of attention. You were on Fox, and it had to do with this school board's apology. Now, they came back later, and they basically distanced themselves from some of Garland's, even the attorney general's comments about what happened. But you were quoted as saying that apology wasn't enough.
No, I don't think it was authentic. I think they were just responding to blowback. I don't think that they really were like, you know what? We should not do that to parents.
Yeah,
we really do value them. I don't think that that was their thought. They were like, school boards are pulling out pulling their support from us, which probably means funding too. Not to mention Merrick Garland's own son-in-law, it came out that is getting all of his money through his company called Panorama, I believe it's called, that provides some of these workshops and curriculums and surveys to schools, to school boards. That is, they are complicit in many of these critical race theory workshops and curriculums that's coming down. It's like he's directly involved. Oh, okay. His son-in-law. Mm-hmm. But to me, still, I mean, he has that. That's not something that you don't talk about at the kitchen table, in my opinion. But yeah, no, I don't believe that they are truly, you know, feeling like, you know what, we went too far. No, I'm not buying it.
Okay. So this is a common thing that happens a lot in our culture. Somebody does something and then they get a lot of blowback. And then you'll hear a statement like this: I'm sorry if you feel I offended you.
Right.
Now, that would be the kind of non-apology, because you're really not apologizing for anything. Mm. In fact, there's a slight accusation that maybe the other person was too easily offended. Uh-huh. And they got offended over nothing. Mm. But that's being passed in our culture as an apology.
Yeah, probably indicative of our public school system, too. of people not learning what apologies really are. I don't want to be, I don't want to practice hypocrisy and say that there's no room for forgiveness for them. I do believe that there is. I just need to see a legitimate apology, because
right.
I'm just not buying it.
Okay.
And I don't even see, you know, during Merrick Garland's hearing, he seemed pretty, you know, he was fine with the language that he used. He didn't seem like he was really pulling anything back.
You know, a lot of the leaders that we see on TV who have even been accused. I think of Governor Cuomo right now. And it's really going to be interesting to see what does shake down in the future, because while some people are paying the big price for what is considered to be law-breaking situations, it would seem right now that there's a double standard in a lot of cases in the federal government right now. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. If you are any way on the right associated with Trump, if you don't go along with the liberal Democrat, the left's agenda, you are enemy number one, mm-hmm. persona non grata.
Well, you might be named a domestic terrorist
yourself.
You
might be named a domestic terrorist.
And I would even go so far as to say, I don't even know that it has to involve a love for or a following or identifying with President Trump. If it's just conservative values, mm-hmm. or if it has to do with something that would be Christian oriented, other religions, they seem to get a pass.
They do.
But if you believe in Jesus, if you say you're a Christian church, right now, in not only in California are you not essential, but there are threats. There were threats that are made that, and this happened in New York, not just even California, but there were threats would say that we're going to come in and take your church building, and you're going to be done, and your property taken and seized. That sounds like something you would hear in another country run by some banana republic, but not in America. Yet here we are.
That's right. Here we are. And, you know, unfortunately, there are so many churches that have long sold out its people. It's very sad. There are still plenty of good ones there. I saw ministers who, because of their stand for Christ and his kingdom, they were willing to be persecuted. And we know that that's our fate, you know, like as Christians, mm-hmm. we read our word. We know that that's what it is. And so I'm always happy to see, believers that are standing on the word of God and not willing to back down. But unfortunately there are ministers out there, churches out there that I don't know if it's because of their tax status or whatever, because, you know, maybe, and I've heard this for years, you know, when churches started to take money from the government, you know, then you start to say, well, I don't want to lose this funding, or I don't want to lose my tax status. And right. So, you know, you give these little excuses or whatever. And if we had still those strong institutions, the strong believers, men and women who were willing to lay down their life truly for Christ, I don't think we would see what we're seeing.
Well, we may see a day where that literally could happen, laying down your life for what you believe. It's not impossible. Other cultures, other societies, other nations have experienced this in the past. And it just could well be that that's part of what God has for us. But I do always love ending on positive notes because I believe we serve a God who is positive and he is the right and all things that are right. And I don't mean politically right. All things that are good and right, they belong to God.
Absolutely.
And we have him to cling to and to run to. And I'm grateful for that. Amen. Tell us a little bit about your new responsibilities on Saturday mornings. What's going on?
So for now, so I'll be on a panel with other moms. I think we're calling it the Parents Panel. It's on Fox News at 8:30.
On Fox News Channel.
Fox News Channel, yes.
Yeah. So that means that it's on the network and you're across the country every Saturday morning. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I'm excited to continue to talk about everything that we're doing. After the response of what I saw in Loudoun County, after I made those remarks about the mass exodus, the room stood to their feet and gave me this resounding applause. And I was very humbled and surprised. And so I created a web page. It's a web page at this point. It's not a full website, but it just has resources on there. It's massexodusmovement.com. And it's for parents, concerned citizens who want to get their children into better learning environments, whether it's homeschooling, it's micro schools, pods, any type of homeschooling co-ops, any type of resource that we're finding that can help push parents in the right direction who want to give their children a better education.
Oh, it sounds great. And yes. I hope that people really take care. Give us that address one more time.
Sure. It's www.massexodusmovement.com.
Keisha King, thank you for coming by today and being with me and really standing up. You're a voice that needs to be heard. And I'm grateful to God that we're able to hear it.
Thank you so much. I'm very humbled.
Well, it's great to have you here. And friends, we'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Back in the studio with Representative Anthony Sabatini. Anthony lives in the Howie and the Hills area, and he represents Lake County. And he is a Gator. I found that out, and that's pretty exciting. Welcome to my program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You know, you were with me over the phone during the CPAC, and that was a very volatile week, let's say. The news media, they were at fever pitch back then at that point in time, and all the things that were going on with Trump came and spoke. And so it was full of excitement, let's put it that way, and I really appreciated your being here. Your visit with us today comes at a time where I know a lot of our listeners are concerned. I believe everyone should be concerned in America right now with what's going on. Yet you come from a unique vantage point. Not only are you representative in the state of Florida, but you're also a candidate for U.S. Congress. So first of all, tell us about that. What went into the decision for you to throw your hat in the ring?
Sure. Well, I've for quite some time now been profoundly disappointed by the milquetoast, moderate policies of most of our Republican officials. They refuse to stand up and fight. They refuse to stand up for social conservatism and I think cultural conservatism and the beliefs of the people who actually get them elected. And so I never wanted to run for office. I didn't want to run for city commission. I didn't want to run for state house Congress. I wanted to go make money and be a lawyer. I was living a good life. But I was very profoundly disappointed by so many of the elected Republicans I have who were so, so weak. And it reminded me of a famous line in one of my favorite books, which is Jesse Helms' autobiography, Here's Where I Stand, where his wife said to him at a campaign event for a different politician they were supporting, his wife said to him, "You have to run for office, because if not, we're going to continue to be so disappointed by everybody who we support. They're always going to let us down. So you, Jesse, you have to run." And that's why he ran for Senate. And I feel the same way. So I'm running for Senate because I think we need people, or Congress rather, because we need people who are going to stand up for strong truths in our society and for conservatism, traditionally defined, but also for basic concepts of freedom, less government, less taxes, less political correctness, and more patriotism. And I just don't see that from enough for politicians. And so that's why I'm running.
And this has been going on for a long time. I think a lot of people are mistakenly thinking that this is almost like an overnight problem that has just crept up with the progressives and now all that happened with that election that is so suspect. But it's actually been going on for a long time, hasn't it?
Absolutely. There's been a civil war within the Republican Party for going on 50 years now. I think it just takes different shapes, different forms, but it's the same old story. It's the elites, the establishment, those who are serving in office for their own personal benefit, getting elected with enormous mandates and then stabbing their voters in the back. Virginia is the best example. They just elected Glenn Youngkin, 11-point swing. He had an enormous mandate to deliver major things. And the first thing he's doing now is saying, oh, well, local governments can do mandatory vaccination. That's fine. I'm not going to get involved with that. Then he appointed his communications director yesterday in Virginia, a young gay communications director who has his pronouns listed in his Twitter profile and describes himself as Latinx, which is a genderless descriptor. So what you're seeing are politicians get elected on the backs of working class, culturally conservative voters, and then stabbing them in the back promptly and banding their concerns. And this has been going on for a long time. And what we need is politicians who are not just going to not do that, but also expose the politicians who are doing that and be almost activistic, almost mm-hmm. like activists in office, and shine a light on the process from within once you get there. And that's what I've done in Tallahassee, shown how the Republican Party has a mandate to go further with the concerns of their conservative constituents and refuse to because they don't want to fight the big fight against the left and the media. And so that's what we need, politicians who are going to do that once they get in office, not just do the right thing, but show who's doing the wrong and expose them so they can weaken the establishment, in my opinion. And so that's why I'm running.
I appreciate your running because I know that's not without a sacrifice. Anytime anyone does anything like what you're doing, you open yourself up with the media. You open yourself up to criticism from the general public. I know it's not just a piece of cake, and it's really, truly, if you're a Republican in this day and age, you're not going to be looked at or even treated nicely necessarily by mainstream media.
Absolutely. But, you know, I'll be completely frank. It doesn't bother me one bit. What bothers me is if somebody I really respect and hold up, like my constituents, conservative constituents, that they were disappointed in me, mm-hmm. which I thankfully has not happened yet. But if it did, that would bother me. But when people who are actually leftist, anti-American, if I could use the word satanic, evil people who are being operated through by forces that are foreign to this country and the culture of this country, it's actually a good thing. I like being attacked by the left because I know that I'm doing something right. When people mm-hmm. who want to destroy our country are criticizing me, it's actually like sort of a vote of validation. It's a sense of validation is incurred because of the fact that I know I'm standing in the right place. Mm-hmm. And I often say to voters, if a Republican's not being attacked severely, not mildly, like the Orleans Sentinel saying that you're just, you know, a bad person or whatever, but really severely attacked, generally that's a pretty good barometer, a pretty good measurement of that person's really fighting. Republicans love to say, you know, I'm fighting for you, I'm fighting this. Well, if you're fighting, where's your black eye? If you're fighting, where's your missing tooth? Where is the mark? Where are the scrapes? Most of our politicians don't have the scrapes because they're not really fighting. Let's mm-hmm. be honest. They're not getting their hands dirty in the arena. They're just saying that because it's a rhetorical flair.
Mm-hmm. Any student of history would know that those early founders of our country, they were familiar with the fact that it's a fight. And they put their own fortunes, their own lives, everything on the line. Really, in most cases, lost all of those things. Some of them lost their lives for fighting for what is right. But now we have, we're being told, and I'm disappointed to hear what you said about the governor in Virginia. And that is so disappointing because we're being told, we're being asked to believe stuff right now, like about the gender thing that you mentioned, that is so ridiculous. It's ridiculous from a scientific standpoint. It's certainly ridiculous from a believing Bible standpoint, but that's nevertheless what we're being asked to believe, that there is another gender or maybe several other genders, the plus meaning a variable that can be added to.
Absolutely.
This is a nutty time.
It's anti-scientific. It's just borderline insulting, and it's extremely dangerous. And the reason they're doing it is because if you can at least get people to start questioning gender and start loosening up what they usually believe about gender, that it is scientific, that it is natural, that it is essentially a good thing, you should embrace your gender, then you can start to attack the family. Because the family, of course, is predicated on the idea of two parents, right. A married couple, yeah. Two different genders. Right. Once you do that, the nuclear family goes down. And the truth is the nuclear family is the biggest obstacle for socialism in society. Because it's the thing that makes people want more than anything else, the thing that motivates them to think about the future and something other than themselves. And the idea of saving their wealth to help their kids and building a society to help their own family. If you can knock down the nuclear family, you can have an omnipotent government that just controls everything, because there's little people, individuals themselves will care about nothing else other than themselves and entrust government to run their lives if there aren't family establishments. And mm-hmm. Edmund Burke and great conservative thinkers have always talked about this. So this is what it's really about. The attack on gender is an attack on family through and through. That's really the whole premise of the whole thing.
Now, this new infrastructure bill that is being, you know, it's like this thing just won't go away. I know it's been reduced greatly, but it's still very invasive, and it comes even at its lower level, a price tag that is unimaginable, $1.2 trillion. But more than that, what it's going to do to the family, what it's going to do to Christian, basically Christian organizations, whether they're churches, Christian schools, colleges, universities, etc. We're being looking at this thing now. It's more of an infrastructure of our life than it is roads and bridges.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a deceptive title. You know, the media, which is completely and totally corrupt at this point, is still referring to it as an infrastructure bill and gaslighting people into thinking that there's significant infrastructure in it. It's about 12 or 18%. Infrastructure. It is less than a quarter of the spending being actually directly spent on bridges and roads. Most of it's spending for other things and consultants and different types of operations and restructuring activities. And you're right, there are things in there, especially with the strings that are tied to the grants that are actually used for infrastructure, that are just being used to push really hardcore social progressivism and the COVID tyranny. A lot of the money that's being spent increases the role of government, increases these vaccine mandates in different sectors of the economy. Anybody who comes anywhere near the spending that's related to this bill will be under the thumb in the mandates that we're seeing across the country right now. So it's awful. And my opponent, Stephanie Murphy, who represents Seminole County in North Orange County, announced last night that she's going to be voting for the bill. So she played the game of pretending that she was open-minded about voting down to try to get credibility with the media. And then, of course, as soon as Pelosi told her she had to vote for the bill, she's voting for the bill.
Mm. This is so disappointing to realize that this is America right now. And I know that you would agree that the people that are your constituents, many of which we feel like we're being sold something. We know we're being sold something. And then after even you find a standard bearer that you feel like can represent you, and we are a representative form of government, then that kind of thing happens. The flip goes on. And so Donald Trump, when he referred to Washington as the swamp, he wasn't just kidding.
No, it's really a swamp. It's really tyrannical. It's the swamp. It's the deep state. It's all those things. And it's getting worse. And I just spent the weekend in D.C. to meet with some very strong conservative groups like the group Freedom Works to talk about anti-critical race theory training that I'm involved in. And I will tell you, the city itself is falling apart. It's worse in a physical sense than it's ever been before. It's not just a corrupt and nasty place, but actually really falling apart. Gigantic homeless encampments of people living in tents, and the heinousness in which they enforce the mask mandates now, it's just gotten to the point where it's really hostile and nuts. So it's really a bad place, and it's getting worse.
It is getting worse. Now, you mentioned the mandates. Just yesterday, we had the governor in Brandon, Florida. And of course, that term, that's no accident. Obviously, he is signing for that. What a sad time when we're seeing these things happen, chants happening, which can't even be repeated on the air, obviously. But these are difficult times, and what it represents is a feeling that is a groundswell of people who are not happy with things. And chief in Florida, we were seeing yesterday the governor making a statement that we're not going to go, we being Florida, in line, in tow with the federal government. How do you see that playing out when it comes down to the rubber hitting the road?
We're going to see very soon what the feds do in response to us. I was very proud to be the only elected official in the state of Florida for the last 4 months calling for an emergency special session to ban these vaccine mandates. And of course, the moderate Republican pushover establishment, which is bought and paid for by big corporations who were acting independently of the Biden administration, by the way. It wasn't just the Biden mandates. These woke liberal institutions like AdventHealth, Disney World, etc., were pushing these vaccine mandates all summer long, and Republican politicians were tight-lipped about it, just like they were tight-lipped about the lockdowns and all this other nasty stuff that was happening. What happened, though, is the groundswell that we built, the pressure we built, convinced the governor to call the session despite the legislature not wanting the session to end these vaccine mandates. So I was pushing for a really strong bill that would have totally and completely protected all medical privacy, where an employer can't even ask you about your vaccine status, and that if they did and try to punish you or fire you, that you would have a personal cause of action, the personal ability to bring a lawsuit against them, injunctions, etc. A lot of what I wanted did not make it into the final bill. We got about what I consider maybe 30 or 25% of what we wanted, but it is a bill that should theoretically stop the firings that are trying to be incurred currently. And so I'm happy with the bill. Obviously, I played a role in pushing it for the session, and the governor got it through. But the legislature, unfortunately, didn't make it as strong as it needed to be. With that said, the federal government's still going to be outraged by what we did produce in the last couple of days. And I think that they're going to be pushing back against Florida and trying to pressure these companies to fire employers despite the new Florida laws protecting those employers. We're going to see. We'll find out in the next couple of weeks. OSHA has already stopped the enforcement of its illegal mandate, but CMS, the agency that runs Medicare and Medicaid funded institutions or controls them by tying strings to the dollars, saying that people need to be vaccinated if they want to receive Medicare or Medicaid money. We're going to see what they're going to do, and we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks.
Wow. These are going to be exciting times for sure. Representative Anthony Sabatini, thank you for being with me here on this program. And we've got to have you hang around if you can and record another one, because this is just too good. God bless you, and friends, we'll see you next time on Afternoons with Mike.